The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors. Keep on, keep on.
Good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre here with you this morning. It's kind of a cloudy gray day out there. I drove into PCTV this morning and was greeted by two ducks in the parking lot. So I know it's going to be a rainy day when I see that. We have a great show coming up for you. We have a visit from our state representative. That's right. Tricia Farley Bouvier is here, state rep for the 2nd Berkshire District. And we're going to have a wide ranging conversation, as we always do when Tricia's here in the studio. Lots to talk about today. Everything from the state education budget to TikTok, maybe we get into, and pay equity for early education. Lots of good stuff coming up. First, let's go to the weather forecast and see what the National Weather Service has in store for us today. Berkshire
Weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, cloudy. A chance of showers, mainly this morning. Cooler with highs in the lower 50s. Southwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour, becoming northwest this afternoon. Chance of rain 50%. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Lows in the mid 30s. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Saturday, mostly cloudy in the morning, then becoming partly sunny. Highs in the lower 50s. West wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you have it. The weather, it did get nice yesterday, though. My goodness, middle 60s and sunny. You don't see that very much in the middle of March anyway. Today being the Ides of March, Friday, March 15th. So beware out there, everybody. You never know what could happen. But yeah, superstition. At least it's not the 13th, right? So welcome again to the show. Tricia Farley Bouvier, good morning to you. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Sean. You do this every week, right? Two days to be on these morning drives.
That's, I do.
Like, that is like commitment,
yeah.
To the people of Pittsfield.
Two days isn't too bad, yeah. But it does kind of mess up my sleep schedule for the weekend, because Saturday at 4:30, I'm bolting right out of bed. And I'm like, I got to get to the radio station. No, I don't. It's Saturday. So thanks for being here today.
Sure. And, happy to be here.
Yeah.
It's a nice way to kind of wrap up the week, is to talk about the issues at hand.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a lot of issues out there, certainly, and you're going to give us some insight on the state side of it, because a lot of times here locally, we don't hear all those things being, you know, essentially removed in a lot of ways from the goings-on in Boston. And also, you are of note, the co-chair of the Joint Committee on Advanced Information Technology, the Internet, and Cybersecurity. My goodness.
Did you practice that?
I didn't. I wrote it down. I had to.
We refer to ourselves as the ATIC committee.
ATIC.
You know?
Yeah.
Kind of brand, we're starting to brand ourselves. It's a new committee, so yeah. My staff is having some fun time branding that.
Great. Well, there's a lot to talk about there, certainly, and, you know, in the news right now is the House of Representatives on the federal side voting to ban TikTok. That being, in their eyes, some sort of national threat to us. Does any conversation like that find its way into any of your committee meetings? Do you talk about things like that, and whether it's a danger here in Massachusetts as well?
So, sure. There's a bill in our committee on banning TikTok from government devices, which you might recall, was it about a year ago or so?
Yeah.
There was sort of a wave of requesting that at different state levels.
It's been a story that's kind of bubbling under for a long time.
Right.
Now it seems to be hitting that peak where it's been officially voted on, you know, to either, I guess the point is to either ban it completely or have the company that owns TikTok, which is associated with the Chinese government, to sell that to an American company, which seems, again, very unusual. It's an unusual request in a lot of ways.
It is. Now, is there a issue with a hostile foreign government having this much data on the American public? Now, and remember, within the American public, there are members of the military. There are government officials at all different levels, right? And then there are people around them, right? So is it a national security issue? It is. Will banning TikTok help that? It will not. The Chinese government could just as easily as you or I, buy that same data from data brokers. So what we really need to do, Sean, is pass comprehensive data privacy. That is something that will help national security and, quite frankly, you and I. Because our data is out there and being bought and sold sometimes for, you know, let's say rather, you know, benign purposes of marketing. Like, for example, your phone, your car, they know if you prefer Starbucks over Dunkin'.
And that's kind of the benign side of it, right? You think of,
it's kind of benign.
Your data is being used to sell you something more, to increase their sales, to maybe, you know, get you away from a different brand and bring you over to theirs. That seems capitalistic in some way. It's probably a little dirty, but not the worst thing that could happen to you. But there's that other side that's really the dangerous stuff,
Your car and your phone also know if you go to the George Crane Center every Tuesday evening.
And how could that data be used against you,
for example? And then it's sold to your insurance companies, life insurance, health insurance, to impact your rate of insurance.
Wow.
That's pretty awful.
That's beyond, pretty awful.
And so we have grave concerns about that kind of data sharing, data brokering.
And it's it seems also that there's your typical conflict between amendments. You know, the First Amendment right to free speech, the Fourth Amendment right to privacy, and things like that. And, and a lot of these things, you know, new technology, the legislation really hasn't caught up with a lot of this stuff yet, right?
Yes, and that's something that is a big concern. It's obviously difficult for government to keep up with the changing technology. At the same time, we use that, we don't understand it well enough, or it's too confusing, and industry uses that against us. It's okay, don't worry about it, we'll take care of it, you don't understand, as a way of kind of kicking the issue down the road, which happens a lot in government anyway. To the point where they have so much control, they've made so much money off of us that that it's really done damage. That is the case also with what's happening with social media, right? Government is having a hard time kind of putting reins around what's happening on social media, and the damage is really clear what's happening on social media, and I would say that that is particularly true for children.
Yeah, those studies have certainly shown that to be true, and there'll probably be more studies that come along. But the real damage is starting to be shown, where I think they've had higher rates of depression, right?
Absolutely.
Higher rates of suicidal ideation.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
Eating disorders. You know, we know we have a mental health crisis in this country. We know it's, you know, we're particularly concerned about the mental health crisis with our youth. And we do know that social media is a big contributor to that.
Yeah.
And the social media companies do not care. They sometimes give lip service to the fact that they care, and the truth is they do not care.
And yet, it doesn't seem like social media is really going anywhere, right? You know, it, just the fight itself with TikTok, saying that there are 130 million people or something in the United States that use TikTok. So you cut that off, you pull that back. There are going to be a lot of unhappy people because they like it. They've gotten used to it. So it's putting that those guardrails around it somehow to protect people, in addition to, you know, the ultimate goal of maybe still being able to use something that you like.
Right. And there, you know, some other, I mean, this is, you know, the United States, right? Like, so some other app is going to pop up and replace. If that's were to happen, I actually do not think it's going
to
happen.
Tell but that to people on Friendster.
Right. they're gonna try to. Something is going to pop up. But then, are we picking winners and losers? Mm. Is that capitalism?
It doesn't sound like it.
We try not to do that.
Yeah.
But I want to be clear that, and I am concerned about a hostile foreign government having this level of data. And I think we absolutely need to address that. It's just that we need to do that with all social media apps, companies, and not just one.
Yeah. And especially now we're focused on a presidential election coming up in a few months, and it'll be here before you know it. And you think about all the things that could be happening sort of below the surface that we don't know about. And there's so much disinformation, misinformation now that we're all learning how to deal with that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing. It's something that maybe we didn't think too much about in previous generations because, you know, if you read something in a newspaper, that was probably correct. If you heard it on the nightly news, that was the truth. And now, what is the truth? Are we trying to figure that out now in this modern era?
Right. So there's a really clear example of that. So now I'm going to bring in AI, okay, artificial intelligence. Really clear example was about a month ago that we had the New Hampshire primaries. Mm-hmm. And there was a robocall. We know what robocalls are.
Right.
From quote unquote President Biden.
Yeah.
To Democrats telling these, you know, the good, you know, we're calling good Democrats to not vote this Tuesday. Because you'll be playing right into the Republican hands by wasting your vote today, you know, on Tuesday. Save your vote for November. So, and it was in his voice using his, you know, some of his, you know, catchphrases like malarkey and, you know, things like that.
Uh-huh.
And very, very credible, very credible recording. Now, a lot of people were like, well, there's no way President Biden, people who in the know would know that President Biden wouldn't do that, but there was lots of reasons for people to believe it. We know that it suppressed the vote, that people did not vote because of it.
Mm.
So voter suppression is a very dangerous thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in this election, I would say that that is a particularly dangerous thing because voter turnout is going to be a particular issue this year, right?
Well, as we've seen, there are razor-thin margins that win and lose elections in particular states.
Right.
And so if there was a bad actor somewhere doing something in particular, let's say in Georgia, you know, or Michigan, or Wisconsin,
that's right,
or someplace like that,
and suppress the vote,
and
there,
changing 10 or 11,000 votes.
Right,
that's all you need.
Right,
that has been shown. So, and you know, I think it seems that the public also are starting to get, and maybe this is a healthy skepticism, getting some trust issues with some of these things. And I think of the Kate Middleton photograph, right, which is all over the internet. And I try not to look and watch stuff like that because I feel like it's really just sort of, okay, I got enough to think about.
Right.
I don't need to be thinking about the royal family and their photographs. But really, there's an underlying issue there, right, which is, do the public trust that what they see in front of them, that what's being presented to them by people that they should be trusting is real and truthful?
Right. And I'm very, very worried about, you know, what I'm kind of referring to as the post-truth era.
Mm.
Now, think about that for a minute. Now, why is that such a problem? Well, first of all, we'd like to know when we're hearing the truth. We'd like to be able to turn to trusted people.
Yeah.
So, for example, what did we just experience? This pandemic, right? You wanted to hear from trusted people for what was the truth.
Could be life-saving.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so now we have to not be able to trust anybody and what they're saying, because who knows? That might be the governor, a deep fake of the governor saying this, right? Mm. So I'm extremely worried about that. And then I'm extremely worried on the other side of it. For example, and I don't mind being really clear about my politics here, if there was something that was brought up about President Trump, and he could say, oh, that was a deep fake. And then a lot of believers would, a lot of his followers would believe, oh, that was a deep fake, even though it was really clearly him.
Mm.
And so people can just, you know, say, that wasn't me, that wasn't me, that was a deep fake. So it's a big concern. There is some news on the New Hampshire robocall, deep fake robocall. Apparently, the League of Women Voters is suing the man who who initiated that call.
Interesting.
Now, his defense is that he did it on purpose to bring attention to the issue. Mm. We'll see.
Yeah. I would think to be like a white hat hacker of some kind.
Right, but if you're going to do that, then maybe you should have told somebody ahead of time. So, you know, that idea that you'd be able to sue is hopefully a deterrent to people, but it truly needs to be against the law. There is work being done on other states around deep fakes. So deep fake, right, is AI generated, really credible, right, either image, voice, right, likeness, to tell without consent. That's very important, without consent. To give a message that is not true. And so the work being done now is to say within 90 days of an election, a non-consensual deep fake that seeks to influence an election is against the law. That would be a crime. So that is not true in Massachusetts yet. We have not passed that, but that's something that we're looking at.
And is that something that generally will be generated at the state level first before it gets considered at the federal level? Because it doesn't seem like a whole lot is happening at the federal level. It's kind of ground to a halt.
Yes, I think that's going to be driven by the states. Yeah. And some states have already passed similar legislation. It's interesting. They pair it. This might not seem an obvious pairing, but what they call deep fake pornography, revenge porn, and deep fake election laws. And in some places they've paired those.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I mean, those are two things that will, you know, depend on that same technology and have maybe different purposes, but certainly two things that should be, you know, found to be unacceptable in society.
Right, exactly.
The basis for our elections, though, is just so sacrosanct, and I can't imagine that anyone would be against it, and yet somehow there's a lot of discussion about why or why not, you know, legislation like that should be passed. And certainly misinformation and disinformation is a tool that's used by bad actors around the world. And I think of Putin, for example, would love for there to be disagreement in country because that feeds directly into what he wants for his ultimate goal for world dominance, essentially.
Exactly. I mean, now, what the argument is against this deepfake work is what they're saying, it's a First Amendment right, that it's free speech. But what's really clear and people need to really understand is there's no constitutional right to fraud. No constitutional right to fraud. That's very important. Free speech and fraud are wholly different things.
Well, as we've said many times, you know, not all speech is protected. When you're crying fire in a crowded theater, that's been proven to be not protected speech. You cannot do that. You do not have the right to do that. And there are lots of other things that go along with that that you just can't do and will not be protected. So, usually because it runs afoul of other people's rights.
Yes. And also, when it comes to elections, let me just bring it back around to elections again. We know that in 2016, there were big efforts, and truly by the Russian government. This is not conspiracy theory, Sean, I promise, for voter suppression. Because, of course, as you said before, Putin's goals I don't think Putin cares who is president of the United States as much as he cares of sowing division and chaos. And so we know, you know, from the investigations that have happened, there was voter suppression in 2016, and it impacted the results of that election.
It's amazing how these world events, where a lot of people, I think, feel like they can shut that out and live their ordinary lives, their daily lives, and not have to think about what's going on overseas or, you know, that's somewhere else. I can deal with, I've got to deal with what's in front of me. But all these things come back around. And that's why talking about AI and talking about deepfakes and things like that are important. And at the state level, at the local level, we really ought to be having those conversations.
Before we move on to something else, I just want to emphasize one thing, Sean, and that is around elections, there's some thinking these days that the way I'm going to exercise my obligations in elections is to not vote this year. That's my stance, is to not vote for either of them. that is a very dangerous thing.
Yeah.
It's a very, very dangerous thing. And it's not that I don't understand people's thinking. People have opinions about different things. Some people are really unhappy that we're having this rematch, that maybe either one of them should be running. I'm not going to dispute that part because those are good discussions to have and people can have their opinions. But the idea that you're going to exercise your right to vote by not voting and that stance, that is a very, very dangerous thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have to make hard choices.
Well, we live in a democracy and we're presented with these choices because it's a privilege. And that many people over 240 years have fought for the right for people to go into that ballot box and make those choices. So to abdicate that really is to give someone else the power.
That's right.
So it'll be interesting. Now, there was a no preference vote that was brought against the president in a couple of primaries, especially in Michigan. And I found that to be very interesting because, again, they're going in, they're voting, but they're voting no preference. And it really is a primary, so there isn't any specific consequence to that. But that's sort of a message to President Biden, isn't it?
Yes, and I thought that that was a really interesting thing. That, and let's just talk about Michigan. I know it was more than Michigan. That there was, in particular in Michigan, there's a lot of people, you know, from Palestinian descent. And quite frankly, they're Palestinian, you know, immigrants.
Right.
And they feel really strongly. And having both that exercise of organizing people around something, now they're still, they can keep that organization together and to send President Biden a message on how they felt about how he's handling this issue. I do believe that's democracy. I do believe that's that democracy. Now, I'm going to say, you know, I hope they don't do the same thing in November, because I think that would be a very, very different message.
Yeah.
And you are essentially voting for the other side
yeah.
if you stay home and not vote. So,
yeah. Well, for the, from their perspective, could be cutting off your nose despite your face. And but, you know, as you said, that's part of the process to see how that plays out. Tricia Farley-Bouvier is our guest here this morning, state representative from the 2nd Berkshire District, representing all 14 precincts of Pittsfield, all seven wards. And so this is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM. We were talking about technology and TikTok and AI and deepfakes. The governor has put you on the statewide AI task force. Tell us what that is going to entail.
Yeah, so this is a pretty big deal,
yeah.
actually. I'm one, you know, the member of the House who is on this. It's filled with people from across the state that are experts, whether in academia or in business, on the issue of AI. And the governor has taken an interesting approach to this. She is saying there is great economic opportunity in AI, and she would like Massachusetts to be the center of that. And that's what we've done a lot with, like, you know, bio in biotechnology in Massachusetts, right? There's a great hub of that in Boston and all the life science centers and things like that. And so she's saying, let's do this for AI. So, you know, that I have to say that I was impressed and a little surprised because, of course, I'm on the stance of we have to protect.
Yeah. Well, as much fear as there is about AI, there are also lots of opportunities like there are with any technology.
That's exactly right. And so this task force is being co-chaired by the Secretary of Technology Services, Jason Snyder, and the Secretary of Economic Development, Elaine Howe. And both will be coming to Pittsfield in the next couple of weeks, which is exciting. And so you can see the approach that they're taking, economic development, technology services, and how we can bring those together. It'll be a very it's a very serious group of people with, you know, hard deadlines and really active participation. But I'm really thrilled for the opportunity to do that.
That's great. And so that's just getting started, just getting kicked off now.
That's right. We had our first meeting, was it last Friday, the Friday before? And, you know, you get sworn into this and, you know, the whole thing, you know. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
How many members are on the task force?
About 20, 21. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. good number of people.
Yeah.
Well, so that's exciting, and congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And, you know, again, opportunities abound. So many questions surrounding it when a new technology like this comes out. Anyone who lived through the internet boom, knowing, you know, how many things changed looking back at the last 25 or 30 years, how has your life changed now that you have the internet? Well, it's everywhere, isn't
it? That's right.
It's all around you. It's in your pocket. It's in your house. It's, you know, all the promises that we had in the 70s and 80s of how you'll have computers everywhere, and nobody had any idea of what that was going to mean. And now we live in it, and we know that there are some really great things about it, and there's some pretty bad things and some pitfalls.
And importantly, the head of the AFL-CIO, Christy Lynch, is on this task force.
Wow.
Because, of course, part of this is workforce, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we train our workforce to be able to do the jobs of the future? And how do we protect our workforce? Because, of course, I think that's one of the big fears out there, right? Is, you know, AI is going to replace me. And in my stance on workers and, you know, any worker, so you, Sean, are a TV executive, mm-hmm. right? Community television executive. Is AI going to replace Sean Sayre?
Mm.
And I say to Sean, AI is not going to replace TV executives. TV executives who use AI are going to replace TV executives who do not use AI.
Yeah.
And fill in the blank mm-hmm. of that profession.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I can imagine, you know, if I was someone who did not use the internet, would I still be employed in doing what I'm doing right now?
Exactly.
Probably not, right? There were plenty of jobs for people who did TV and radio back in the 70s and 80s before the internet was a requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And most of those folks retired and said, well, you know, mm-hmm. if they weren't going to be into the internet, you know what? I'm out.
Right.
And that's okay, right? Because
right.
that's, but, you know, there's always something new to learn.
That's
I think,
exactly
in,
right.
In everyone's job.
That's
as
exactly
you said.
Right. And is this scary? Is this the same as, you know, a new technology on an iPhone? Is this the same as, you know, Microsoft has a new version that you have to learn what the new ribbon is on top? No, this is not the same.
Mm.
This is going to...
fundamental change.
Right. It's going to be a fundamental change, and it's going to touch every single thing we do. So
yeah, nothing to worry about
right.
there.
and really, let's just talk about some of the opportunities. So
yeah,
let's talk
sure.
about some of the opportunities in medicine. So we talk about, like, you know, soon we're going to be able to 3D print a new liver for you, right? Now that's going to change people's lives,
mm-hmm,
right?
I'm sure.
And now how is AI going to, AI is going to supercharge 3D printing a new liver.
Mm-hmm.
People talk about cancer treatments. Well, you know, they're getting better and better at targeting that cancer treatment, but AI is going to be able to better predict how this cancer treatment is going to work on you.
Hmm.
And then, of course, you know, there's a lot of things about music and you know, there's just so many ways, music, screenplays, writing,
mm-hmm.
how kids are going to learn in school,
yeah.
right? And so it, not fighting against AI, but yeah. how do we integrate AI yeah. into our lives?
And, you know, that's driving some of the other things that we've seen, like the big writer's strike and so actor strikes. They're looking at it and saying, well, is this going to affect our actual industry?
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, there'll probably be opportunities for that, but the actors and the writers just don't want to get taken advantage of,
mm-hmm.
right?
That's exactly right. And they should be protected.
Yeah.
There's something called copyright law
yeah.
that's been longstanding stuff. And these companies are just ignoring it.
Well, in a way, the AI companies have been sort of vacuuming
that's
up
right.
all of this data, all of this learning that we have had for, you know, hundreds and thousands of years, and bringing that into their computers and their data banks and saying, okay, now we have a tool that leverages all that. Well, wait a minute. Some people owned some of those things.
Right, exactly. Right? Exactly right. And I do think that just as this has happened with other technologies, we need to be able to get the guardrails around AI. I very, very strongly yeah. believe that.
And probably not only once, but to have a continuing discussion about it, right, as
absolutely.
Things evolve.
Absolutely. Yeah. But there'll be some groundbreaking court decisions on AI. And I hope some of them come soon, especially around that copyright thing, because that's going to, you know, what are they, what are the, what are the judicial decisions going to be?
Yeah.
Is it going to be like, sorry, you got to get rid of all that stuff you've vacuumed up for over the last several years, and then get permission for everything?
Or to compensate people for what they've used.
Right, or to compensate people. Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But, you know, we had fundamental changes in our lives years ago. Like, think about the Industrial Revolution. That completely changed everything. Like, people left the farms and you know, crowded into the cities for these jobs. And then with more automation, we used to work, 6.5 days a week, right?
Yeah.
And
not me.
No, I'm talking, 100 years ago, 75 years ago, to have a half day on Saturday was really, really normal 75 years ago.
Yeah. Wow.
And so is it going to be that we're going to be a 4 day a week? Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be the expectation? And is that okay?
Right.
The big thing is we have to make sure in that we have protection for the individual and the family to make sure those 4 days a week are still living wage.
Somehow stay human.
Exactly.
That's the key.
Exactly.
Tricia Farley-Bouvier, my guest here this morning. We've reached that top of the hour break, Tricia, so we're going to take that now and do our station ID and thank our underwriters, and we'll be back for part two of our conversation this morning. Again, the Ides of March episode of Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM. We'll be right back after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
Hello, this is Congressman Richard E. Neal, and you're listening to 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio.
Support for WTBR comes from MyCom Federal Credit Union, 101 Fenn Street in Pittsfield, where their mission is to continue to promote the principle of people helping people while providing services that meet the diverse and ever-changing needs of their membership. MyCom Federal Credit Union, online at mycomcu.org. And, do you need help heating your home? Berkshire Community Action Council may be able to help. The Fuel Assistance Program is accepting new applications beginning November 1st. This program assists with your primary heating source, including all heating types. Once you're eligible for fuel assistance, you're also eligible for a discount on your electric bill. Go to bcacinc.org for more information.
Wonder what happened to those great local PCTV channels? Did you lose them? No worries, they're still there. Go to cable channels 1301, 1302, and 1303 to watch the best local content on television. News and information, sports and entertainment, city council, school committee, July 4th parade. It's all there waiting for you. Pittsfield Community Television. For over 30 years, we are still your local television.
You're hearing the stories of our countywide housing challenges all the time. Housing the Berkshires, a coalition of change, is a growing group of community stakeholders, municipal leaders, and friends just like you who want to create a positive impact on housing needs in the Berkshires. Join us in our commitment to making lasting changes in our housing landscape. We are good neighbors, creative innovators, committed partners, and determined navigators. To join us, visit berkshirehousing.com today.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
I regret to hear on WTBR, and I want to tell you about my show, Nothing But Old 45. I have an absolute blast playing my records here on WTBR for 2 hours every Monday morning, and I'll crank out the best of top 40 oldies and classic rock Monday here on WTBR, the home of Nothing But Old 45 since 2014. Nothing But Old 45, Mondays from 10 a.m. until noon, here on 89.7 WTBR FM for the love of radio.
2222 and online at timslawncarelandscaping.com.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Yes, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre here with you on Friday the 15th of March, and Tricia Farley-Bouvier, our state representative, is here in the studio this morning, live and local, and we're talking to her about a lot of different issues. We'll come right back to that conversation in just a moment. First, let's go to the weather forecast and find out what the National Weather Service has in store for us today.
Berkshire Weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, cloudy. A chance of showers, mainly this morning. Cooler with highs in the lower 50s. Southwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour, becoming northwest this afternoon. Chance of rain 50%. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Lows in the mid-30s. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Saturday, mostly cloudy in the morning, then becoming partly sunny. Highs in the lower 50s. West wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, thank you very much for that. And we will move along with our interview here this morning. Thanks again, Tricia, for being here. Tricia Farley-Bouvier is my guest this morning.
Good morning, Sean. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. So let's go into the headlines here for a minute.
Okay.
All the things that people are talking about. Certainly the Berkshire Eagle top headline today looks at the school budget, the local school budget for the Pittsfield Public Schools, in a deficit of $3.6 million for a couple different reasons. But the ultimate result of that could be a loss of up to 100 jobs for the district, which would be devastating, right? I mean, no doubt about it.
It is devastating, and it's just hard for me to believe that we're back here again.
And it does seem to go in cycles. So the various reasons that are being brought forward, the loss of federal ESSER money, which was support for school districts in the wake of the pandemic, that was sunsetting, ending, and that was fully expected to a
fully
certain
expected
extent.
Fully expected and fully planned for.
Yeah.
Right.
The other couple of things that are going on, one of which is the state education budget, the Chapter 70 money, maybe a little bit less this year than normal. So give us an insight into that, what's going on in the State House there. And then there's one other thing that's more of a technical thing that's going on with the schools,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so all of these things are colliding together in a perfect storm for Pittsfield. Pittsfield isn't completely unique that each of these things are happening, but the fact that all of them are coming together, we are kind of unique.
Yeah.
So we talked about the ESSER money. That was the federal funds. It was for pandemic era, kind of boosts to help get kids back on track.
Right.
That's planned for it to go. Still hard.
Very hard.
Because these are real jobs
and
that people have.
And not only that, they made real impacts in the school.
But at least it was really clear how long that was going to last and that was planned for. The other thing that's happening is Chapter 70. Chapter 70 is, you know, a term we use because it's literally the Chapter 70 in Massachusetts state laws, which is referred to as Chapter 70, of how the state reallocates money for education. And we passed a law back in 2019, so not that long ago, that really transformed the Chapter 70 formula. Very big changes, and it made a big difference for places like Pittsfield.
Yeah.
And the underlying principles behind SOA, one of them was that while it was acknowledged that it costs more to educate a child who comes from a low-income family, like people kind of got that, costs more. What wasn't understood until then was that it costs exponentially more to educate high density of low-income kids. So if you have a fourth grade class with like two kids who have low income, that's very different than having a full class of low-income kids of like 20 or 22 kids, and all of them are low-income, right? Just takes more resources to do it. So the state fully acknowledges that. And so I don't know. I think people are going to be too bored if I get too far into the weeds in it. But there are these different groups depending on your percentage of low-income kids. And there are 12 groups,
okay?
And we, last year, we were in group 11, okay? And group
based
11.
Based on the number of low-income students that you have in your district.
And the percentage.
So essentially, at some point, though, there's going to be a cutoff
that
breaks you from one group to the other.
That's right.
If you're in one group, you get more money. And if you're in another group, you get less money.
Exponentially more money.
Yeah,
like a lot more money.
Yeah.
And so we were in group 11, which is 70 to 80% of your students are low-income. This year, when they shook out the count and matched all the kids of who's low income or not, we're at 69.96%.
Which equaled about, from what I saw in the news reports,
two
two or three students, right?
And because each kid, where Pittsfield is paid for each kid so much more per kid for being in group 11, that alone equals $2.3
million. Wow. And so that's a loss as of this coming fiscal year.
Yes.
That the schools will not have $2.3 million to work with.
Pittsfield Public School. Mm. Right. And so that is the work that I've been doing with DESE, Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, that I've been working with Kristen Benking and Joe Curtis, also working very hard on this. Mm. We are trying to fix this issue. It is difficult to fix because the law has it that it has, you know, this is the formula and we have to do it. There is a glimmer of hope. There's a glimmer of hope that we might be able to fix it. So that is one issue.
It's
$2.3 million worth of an issue.
Yeah, and we have to be real hopeful there that can be resolved.
And there are 49 other districts that dropped a low-income group.
Wow.
Pittsfield has the highest dollar amount that we lost because of it.
Okay.
There's another issue, and that is in this formula, I did mention it was a complex formula. there's an inflation factor.
Okay.
And the last few years, the inflation factor was high. And, you know, and we actually cap it at 4.5%. So there was 4.5 for the last 2 years.
Mm. And reasonably so, because inflation has been high for the last few years.
Right. But it's been like 7-8%. Mm. But we cap it at 4.5.
Yeah.
This year, the inflation factor being used for Chapter 70 is 1.35.
Mm. Which seems low compared to what actual inflation
has been.
People are experiencing.
Right. Yeah. And so we are very, you know, that's hit every district across the state.
Right.
And there's an argument to be made that if the inflation rate was much higher as it was than the 4.5 cap, we've actually lost all that. We still have to pay, like the costs really did go up, right? Much higher than 4.5%, and all of that's left on the table. So we're trying to address that too. That's going to be really difficult because all of this is happening, Sean, at the same time. We're in big trouble on our state budget this year.
Well, that was my next question for you, which was, you know, how much of that has been impacted by the state revenues and how a drop in that affects, sort of ripples out toward everything that the state can and normally does for school districts and for towns and for everything else.
So the formula is not impacted by the revenue, but fixes to this, let's say, this is like a one-year glitch on what we had expected to be or something like that. Mm-hmm. There's not any money in the pot to fix that. So this is why it is really, it's going to be very, very difficult to do it. We're just trying our best to take care of Pittsfield.
And I would imagine there are other communities in similar situations that are probably fighting for their share also. And to make sure that they, are you hearing of other districts where they're looking at layoffs like this?
Absolutely. So Malden is an example. Mm. Malden last year got like $10 million additional from the year before. Last year, and this year they're getting $1 million, which is sort of close to us. Last year we got like 6.4 or something.
Yeah.
Last year, and this year we're getting 640,000.
Wow! So that's like really decimating.
It's decimating, right? Yeah. And Malden's reasons are different than our reasons. Mm. They're not a district that dropped in a low income district. They have a different reason.
Interesting.
And so, to go and say, hey, you have to fix Pittsfield, when so many other districts are like, hey, you have to fix Malden. Hey, you have to fix Northampton.
Yeah.
Hey, Westfield is having issues. You know, Beverly is having big issues.
Mm.
And so just to fix Pittsfield, you know.
But that's
why. There's 351 cities and towns in Massachusetts. Exactly. So.
But that's why your voice at the State House is so important, because that's what we need, is someone to stand up and raise the hand and say, no, you got to think about Pittsfield here, folks. We're, you know, we got a problem.
Exactly.
You got to deal with it. As much as they would look to you when Beverly, for example, has a problem and says, you got to help us with this, right? That's where it all comes out.
And I have to say that if I could say this to you and the public, I've never understood so like with so much reality how much persistence counts, because I've been told no, it can't be fixed so many times over the last 6 weeks. I'm so sorry this is happening to Pittsfield, but there's nothing we can do, and I'm just not stopping.
Yeah.
And so there's times I truly feel like I'm going into battle.
Sometimes it's the only way to get things done, though.
Right.
Someone who will not stop is the person that usually gets something done. Speaking with Tricia Farley-Bouvier this morning, she is the state representative for the 2nd Berkshire District here, representing all of Pittsfield, and this is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM. So, good to know some of the basis behind the headline today. The other headlines we've been seeing in the news this week regards the fantastic play of the Pittsfield High School Generals in the Final Four of their division for the state. And first of all, congratulations to both PHS and Taconic for making it to the Final Four
really
this year.
Really amazing, yeah. Amazing run both these teams had.
Fantastic, and we followed them all the way. We provided video coverage for as long as we could during the tournament, and then state MIAA tells us that we cannot broadcast the last two games because they have a contract with another company that is a paid thing, and there's all kinds of stuff. So if people were wondering why PCTV didn't cover those last couple of games, that's the reason that we're not basically not allowed to. But if you listen to WTBR,
I have to ask this question though.
You could
Sean.
Hear it on the radio.
Okay, and, but could you watch it in Pittsfield?
If you paid NFHS, the company, you could stream it and watch it supposedly.
Yeah. Didn't so the access is an issue, and
that's right.
Why
yeah.
I really appreciate all that PCTV does with this coverage, because it gives actual access to people to do it.
Yeah, so. Totally is. And hats off to our sports team here at PCTV and to Bob Heck, who called all the games, including two games on the road in Worcester, who he drove with our portable equipment, hooked it up, and got us a feedback here. And it was actually kind of exciting to listen to the games, which that's all the positive stuff,
yes.
Right? So something really negative, though, happened at one of those games, and really something that shouldn't happen in high school sports, probably shouldn't happen in all of sports.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the spitting incident, where a player from Old Rochester spit in the face of one of the PHS generals during a play.
Mm-hmm.
And then our player, the PHS player, was actually called for a foul for shoving him back. And, you know, I think a very reasonable response to that. What's your take on all of this?
Sean, it's disgusting.
Mm.
And quite frankly, it's a criminal act, right? Spitting is an assault, right? And let's face it, in this time of COVID, the idea that somebody would spit on somebody else is disgusting, okay? It is clearly a racial act also, right? Like there was clear other things going around that made it not just a player against a player.
That was the atmosphere in the room, from what I understand.
And it is that a young person did a bad thing is like that person has to be held accountable.
Yep.
I am actually much more concerned about the hostile environment in which our players were playing.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm hearing reports of from trusted people in the community that the fans were very aggressive. In their name calling, including using the N-word, including saying "go back to where you came from," and so they were aggressive towards our players, and they were aggressive within the stands against people, fans on both sides.
Right.
There was, my understanding is, their school leaders were actually in the stands.
Mm.
They reported it to MIAA, and the response was that more police presence was brought from around the thing to keep the Pittsfield High fans in line.
Oh, boy. And not being there, I can't tell you that was actually, necessary. But, boy, it seemed like the other way around was probably more important to make sure that the Pittsfield High folks who were there weren't going to face further harassment and weren't in physical jeopardy of trying to, just enjoy the kids' basketball game, and then to leave in peace.
Right. And to leave in peace and safety.
Yeah.
So there was real safety concerns.
Yeah.
So, and then we look at Coach Jerome Edgerton, who handled himself. He took care of his players.
He sure did.
Which is the job of the coach.
Yeah.
Taking care of his players and teaching his players how to act on the court and on the bench. It appears as if the coach on the other team did not rise to that standard. Mm. Now, I have to say, when I was first in this job, I learned directly from now coach Jerome Edgerton what it was like for him to be a player on the court. Mm. And this kind of atmosphere happened to him all the time.
Really?
This is not new that people act this way towards players of color. Mm. What is new is that we're not tolerating it anymore.
Yeah.
And we're calling it out. What happened?
Well, there's two things happening, right? We're calling it out and we're not tolerating it. But the other side is that, that people feel more free to let that fly, right? And to do and say whatever they want. So those two things are kind of clashing. And I think about, you know, the sports fans can be kind of a rabid bunch in a lot of ways. I'm around some sports people and, you know, it gets very passionate. You got to draw the line somewhere, though, and still stay human and say, wait a minute, these are people, these are, you know, kids, students with their families, and they're playing a basketball game and they want to, you know, sure, they want to win. Everybody wants to win. But at some point you also want to, you know, be civil and that level of hostility, where is it coming in from? Why? And it shouldn't be tolerated.
And I actually don't care why.
Yeah.
I just want it to stop.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Right? You can tell me, oh, I've got all this, like, you know, anger inside me, whatever I feel. Like, you don't let it out in the bleachers of a youth game. Mm. Like, just don't do it. It's not acceptable, period.
Yeah.
And
well, it's the adult's behavior that we ought to be really focusing on.
I'm very, very concerned about that. And I think we need to draw the line and say, this is not acceptable. I'm, you know, working with some members of the community to reach out to the MIAA because in the end, they're responsible for this.
Yeah.
This was their tournament. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that oversee every varsity organization across the state. And they need to have standards and they need to have accountability that they are following those standards.
Yeah.
And there have been a real uptick in anti-Semitic graffiti, remarks, taunting in the stands and on the court. And now, you know, this racial thing. And for people to say, well, why are you making everything racial? No, this is racist, what was happening. So call it as it is, and let's do the education that's necessary for people to understand the impact this has on a player and on the fans. It is not acceptable, and it has to stop, Sean.
Yeah. It seems like there are some connections going on between the superintendent. Curtis, for example, spoke with the superintendent in the old Rochester district, and there have been some conversations going on between principals. I don't know if the coaches have had conversations, but it does seem like there needs to be in the off season here some reckoning in terms of how these tournaments are handled, right? And what is acceptable and not acceptable, and draw that line and say, no, this is a student athletic event, and we're gonna, you know, right down the line, anyone who's gonna, you know, violate any of that, they're just out.
Right.
And actually, that's what happened to this particular player.
Right, but not before the end of the game.
That's right.
I mean, that should have been a red card, whatever the red card is in basketball, okay? But that should have been
ejection.
Right? Just gone from the game. Yeah. That's what should have happened.
Yeah.
How many points did this? This is one of their top players. How many points did he score afterwards? He was treated as a hero, you know, by his side. You know, but now they're going to go on to the final game.
Yeah.
Right? Is that just? It's not. And this is not about Pittsfield not knowing how to lose, right?
Yeah.
This is not about this. This is not sour grapes. It's like what should be acceptable. Yeah. And this is not acceptable.
Well, and they're going to be facing Charleston in that final game. So that'll be, or Charlestown? Charlestown.
Yeah, yeah.
That'll be a very interesting matchup to watch for various reasons.
Right.
Tricia Farley Bouvier is my guest here this morning on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR FM. And with the last few minutes we've got left to talk about pay equity. And I know that you attended a legislative breakfast that was put on by the Berkshire United Way and Nonprofit Center of the Berkshires. It was a couple, 3 weeks ago, maybe at this point. Lots to talk about there that affect nonprofit organizations. But one of the commonalities that came up was how people in those sectors, and especially early education, are paid. and can they sustain, can they survive on the pay that they're getting? And I know you've done a lot of work in that area. Maybe talk about that a moment.
Right. So I feel like we will have done our work and have achieved our overall goals when the teacher of a three-year-old is paid the same as a teacher of a third grader.
Mm.
Right? And
that's not happening right now.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Because our whole mindset is that when very young children go to school, they're the babysitters.
Mm.
Right? And what is happening now is the pandemic had a lot to do with mm-hmm. what the change of thinking is, mm. right? That we understand more that early education and care is at the very center of our economy, right? People can't go to work, right?
And not to mention that's a critical time for education for young children.
Absolutely. Mm. And so, from birth to three, birth to five, mm. That is the most critical time for brain development, the basis of everything. And so we need to have high standards for early education teachers, mm-hmm. right? They need to have the education level of teachers in the K-12 mm-hmm. system, and they need to be paid.
Yeah.
So are we there yet? We are not, mm-hmm. but we've made great progress. Something that's happened recently, so when I say recently, we're going to give a two-year history. How does that sound? That's not too bad, right? I'll try not to make this too long. So a couple of years ago in the budget, we quadrupled what was then the all-time high in a line item in the Massachusetts budget for what we call salary reserve for early education. How can we get money into the for these teachers, like go to the teachers, not just the program, but go to the teachers. And this was a big win. Mm. Like, oh my gosh, look at, we're really making progress. Just a few months after that, we here in Western Mass got a kick in the teeth because they took that $80 million line item and they distributed it across the state in these six regions across the state. Based on, so there's this federal rule that says you have to base it on cost, mm-hmm. market value, like the market value. And in the previous administration, state administrations, they said, well, we're going to do it on market. So what does the market hold in Boston? How much will people pay in Boston for daycare and early ed compared to what they pay in Western Mass?
Mm.
It really should be based on cost. What does it cost? And so this is when elections matter, Sean, because this governor came in and said, no, that's not right. Because what happened is that, I'm just talking about an infant rate, okay? The infant rate in the Boston metro area went up by 45%. The infant rate, with all this new money that we put in Western Mass, went up by 10%. Come on.
Yeah.
It was terrible result. So this year, it's just been announced with the new commissioner that we are starting to even out those costs. Hmm. That's going to make a big difference for the teachers in Western Mass.
And those teachers, like we said, you're expecting a lot out of them. You're expecting the education level and the training to be able to effectively do those jobs. And at the same time, you're paying them much less than what they'd be worth, and maybe not even enough to keep up with their student loans. Right?
Oh, that's absolutely right.
So, I mean, that equation doesn't work.
Right.
And if you're expecting really great results. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But if you're expecting really great results from attracting people to that profession under those conditions, you're probably not going to get them.
And this is not a straight road. Like we've just we're facing right now a big bump in the road in early ed where something called the C3 grants we've run out of money in that line item. And so the last two payments for May and June are going to be cut. And it's definitely hurting local providers. So this is not easy to fix. But that is the path that we are on to try to really, I'm a true believer in early education. Mm. I actually think it's the secret sauce.
Well, and supposedly we will be looking at possibly mandatory pre-K throughout all of Massachusetts at some point in the future coming up. So stay tuned on that. And
I
think we're...
I want to correct a
30
word.
30 seconds we have
Universal
left.
Pre-K, Universal pre-K, not mandatory.
Okay, yes.
There's a big difference.
But that's great, but it has a lot of things, and maybe we'll have another whole show about that.
Okay.
Tricia Farley-Bouvier, thank you so much for being here this morning. I always appreciate the great conversation and insights that you give into all the things that are happening that in the Boston side and the State House that affect us here in Pittsfield. So
absolutely.
Thank you very
it's
much.
Always a good conversation, Sean. Thank you so much. And I hope everybody has a great day and a great St. Patrick's Day weekend.
Yes, St. Patrick's Day. That's right. Very, very nice to tell us that. All right. And be safe out there, everybody, for St. Patrick's Day as well.
That's right.
All right, everybody. We'll see you again next week. And this is Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR.